the recordings are started.
Thank you very much. Hello and welcome to the CCWG on Accountability meeting number 51 on September the 1st, 2015. As usual, we will be doing the roll call with those attending on the other Connect room. And if there's anyone at this point that is not in the Adobe Connect room but is in the phone bridge, I would like you to please state your name so we can add you to the roll call at this point. Is there anyone in the phone bridge that is not in the Adobe Connect room? Okay, so having no one else in the phone bridge and only people attending on the Adobe Connect room, I will remind you to, of course, fill in your statement of interest as usual. If you haven't done so by this time, please make sure to fill it in as soon as possible. Staff will be able to assist you if you have any problem with your Wiki account or any doubts on how to fill in your statement of interest. I remind you to please mute your lines if you're not speaking and to state your name for the record and to letting everyone know who's speaking on the other side. And with no further delay, I will turn now to my co-chair, Matthew Bale, for the next agenda item. Matthew?
Thank you very much, Leon, and hello, everyone. This is Matthew Bale speaking. We wanted to start this call with a review of the landscape of the inputs we've recently received so that we all share the same kind of the same level of information about where we stand. As a reminder, the public comment is open until September the 12th. A number of contributions are currently being drafted in many organizations, and we've received, last time I checked, it was 10 submissions, including a very significant impact analysis from Jones Day, acting in their capacity as ICANN corporate lawyers. This impact analysis has been forwarded to the CCWG lawyers for review, and we are expecting an initial feedback from this review in actually by the end of today, U.S. time. It's also worth mentioning that there is a plan for Jones Day lawyers to speak with CCWG lawyers, Sidley, the two firms, and so that the any misunderstanding can be cleared before we get the feedback. In addition, there has been several calls that you have been aware of. Yesterday night was a briefing to the ICANN board that took place for 90 minutes. There was a call with the CCWG accountability advisors, which has taken place yesterday as well. I can also mention last week, on Tuesday, the CCNSO organized two CCTLD webinars that I attended to, and I think there are other several events. So the outreach is extremely active, and what we'd like to do in this agenda item is open the floor for anyone to mention either significant outreach events or most importantly, the feedback that have been received during these events. And maybe to start with, it would be good, Leon, if you could provide a very quick overview of the feedback received from the advisors.
Happy to do so, Matthew. Thank you. This is Leon Sanchez. And, well, many of you attended the call with advisors. We had four advisors on the call. We listened to Janard Scholte. We listened to Lee. We listened to Willie. And we listened to Nell, I think, also. And most comments from the advisors were supportive of our proposal so far. And we also heard some very valuable feedback from John and from Nell. Nell stated that our proposal should look more into ICANN's outreach in order to make ICANN a more transparent organization. And this is something that we would, of course, be looking into when refining our proposal for the final version. We also received some feedback from John with regards to the methodology that the voting would actually take place in the community mechanism. And, well, pretty much that could sum up the most relevant comments that I remember from our session with the advisors. And well, they agreed that the group had a great effort, and they congratulate everyone in the working group for what we had come up to. So I think it's fair to pass the message and congratulate everyone for the effort and for the proposal that we have all built together. And this is, of course, the views of our advisors. So I think that would be a very quick update on this, Matthew, and I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you, Leon. And with that, I'd like to open for other group participants and members to share the feedbacks they're hearing, receiving, and any updates on this that would be relevant. And I see Steve is first in line. Steve.
Thanks, Matthew. It's Steve DelBianco with the Business Constituency. Last week I discussed some of the BC concerns on contract enforcement and things like the separation working group. There were two other minor issues that the BC is concerned about and is in our draft comments that we're reviewing right now, so I thought I'd throw them out there. The first is the board is suggesting they will give us new wording, new text for the affirmation of commitments WHOIS review, which we're bringing into the bylaws as part of this transition process. And we don't yet have that text, or if we did, then shame on me for missing it. But the BC is keen to understand what significant change the board and legal team want to make to this text that's been in the affirmation of commitment since 2009. We noted that a review on the WHOIS using that very same language was conducted a few years ago without destructive effect, but we are open to try to rationalize that language and make it work better. We're just anxious to see what the board produces. If they wait until after the public comment period, that gives the VC no opportunity to react to it. So I would ask the board and legal team to get moving on that. Thank you. And then one other small item. It's the human rights elaboration. The BC is following it, but not really active on that group, and maybe we should be, because we noted an early draft suggested using the UN's guiding principles for business in human rights as opposed to the UN Declaration of Human Rights. And that's not just a subtle difference. It's a huge difference. The principles on business and human rights seem to have been written for businesses in the resource extraction industry and contain very little of the comprehensive human rights, balanced human rights framework that's in the UN Declaration on Human Rights. So I'd welcome input from those of you that are active on the human rights team, but I don't want to bog this call down since I know you have broader issues to cover. Matthew, thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve. That's very useful and typically the kind of update that's valuable to see our work forward. I've noted a question by Matthew Shears in the chat about the feedback from the co-chair discussions with the NTIA, and I'd like to turn to Thomas for an update on this, since I did not personally attend this call. Thomas?
Yes, thank you very much, Mathieu, and welcome everyone on this call. Indeed, we did have a telephone call with NTIA, basically to check whether there are any concerns or whether there's anything that we should take particular note of, but also to keep up the dialogue between NTIA and our group. And I guess that I'd like to summarize the call in three thoughts. The first thought that Larry shared with us is that he reminded us of his blog post and also his interventions in Buenos Aires, where he asked our group to document thoroughly why we are doing what we are doing, and also why we are doing things now versus doing them at a later stage. So I think that the impression that he has is that we're still a little bit light on the documentation side of things, that there is too little rationale in our report why we're doing the things that we're doing, but the pros and cons of the various models were that we've been looking at. And I'll speak to that a little bit more when we get to the to agenda items, I think, number 5 and number 6. So we will make sure to continue that discussion with this group and discuss what actions we can possibly take in order to improve on that. Larry also mentioned that there might be some questions surrounding the IRP, that leads me to the third thought, and that's basically what we conveyed to Larry, namely that our group has worked strictly on a requirements basis. So we established requirements, we reached consensus on the requirements for an accountability architecture and accountability enhancements, and we were looking for solutions that would best possibly fit these requirements. And that, you know, should NTIA see that we're going too far or that we're falling short of NTIA requirements with our own requirements, then it would be good to get a signal from NTIA so that we can take that on the record. Because so far, I think this group has worked hard to make sure that we're meeting NTIA requirements as published subsequently as of the day of the NTIA announcement. I think I should pause here with my brief recap. I should add that we have invited NTIA to the calls with the board to make sure that the dialogue that is continuing is such that all parties involved have the same information, get the same responses to concerns there might be, so that everybody can make an informed decision. Back over to you, Mathieu.
Thank you, Thomas. And I see a small queue forming, so I'm turning to Anand.
Thank you very much. I have more of a question than a comment. The first version of the draft paper that we issued many months ago implied that Article 2, Section 3 on non-discriminatory treatment was being deleted in favor of some words within the core values and principles. The second draft was completely silent on it, but the summary that Becky made of bylaw changes implied that indeed it was still being deleted. And I guess we need a clarification on that. And to the summary Becky provided was very useful, and we've unfortunately has added a page or so of comments to the ALAC statement. The version that is forthcoming with a third column adding rationale will help significantly if we can get that out before the, you know, while we still have a time to look at it. but I would like clarification, not necessarily on this call, whether Article 2, Section 3 is indeed being deleted or is not. It's rather substantive. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan, and I suggest we put an action item for clarification on this on the list. That will certainly involve Work Party 2. And, okay, it's being added to the list. And next in line is Malcolm.
Hello, Mathieu. Thank you. Malcolm Hutton here.
For the record.
I would like to ask how we intend to proceed with the Jones Day advice. Do we wish to give a systematic answer to the points that are raised, particularly maybe write a reply to the Jones Day piece? The Jones Day piece is a long and complex and rather thorough document. It is quite hard to read, I must say. It's the formatting of it with columns that are only 25 letters wide makes it very difficult to read. So I understand if not everybody's read it all. I must say I've only read the first half of it. But the first half of it deals with the IRP and our proposals relating to that repeatedly, not only in the IRP section, but also in the mission section and the core values section and so forth. And the essence of it is that Jones Day is still arguing that fundamentally the board must remain the final arbiter of whether or not what it has done is correct, that any IRP should only be advisory, and that ICANN should not be subject to coercive review, even according to its own standards and documents. Now, that input, to be honest, is mostly not legal input. It's about the objectives. It's about whether or not we wish ICANN to have a limited mission and to be subject to coercive review to keep it within that mission. So I wondered if we wanted to, if we were planning to reply, to set out, look, some of the points that you raise are points that we would wish to take into account, but some of them are fundamentally a difference, disagreement with our, with what we have set as being our objectives and intent here. How will we proceed with this? Will we address it directly? Will we let our proposal speak for itself? Will we engage in a dialogue? And if so, how do members of the group, rather than just the lawyers, take part in that?
Thank you very much, Malcolm. I think you're raising very valid points. And the first point I would like to make is, if you look at the memo, the contribution on our public comment forum, the Jones Day memo there's a foreword by the board, which is specifically calling for us to signal any misunderstandings that would be present in the memo. So I think a core focus for us right now, with the lawyers, but also the group, obviously anyone in this group is welcome to read the memo, provide their own analysis and comments on it. Although, as you said, it's not easy work. But the board is specifically calling for this, and I think this is a very good sign of the constructive dialogue we have with the board right now. Is that it's really about ensuring we share a common view on the proposals and our intents are clear. So we have asked lawyers to come back to us with something short, something that would highlight the relevant points that are part of the Jones Day memo. I'm sure there are, and I have actually spotted some points that we would probably need to take on board. Some of the points in the memo that would actually be based on wrong assumptions about our proposals, that's very important to come back to the board very quickly on this to ensure everyone shares a common view. Other strategic views. It appears so far, and I have read the 43 pages, And I think it's good for us to note that there is the memo from Jones Day does not mention any key legal issues, technical problems with our proposals, but only focus on basically what is totally fair for a corporate lawyer, which is pointing the board towards the appropriate risk level they want to take. And I think it's a good thing, a good signal for us. And as you said, then it will become a discussion about what is appropriate and not what is technically or legally feasible, which would be already a nice step forward. So to conclude on and answer your question about how the group can be involved into this, I think anyone can provide their own reading. Once we have the lawyer's input, obviously we'll have a discussion with the board, and that's really much the focus of the next agenda item and the next call with the board to exchange and have further dialogue with the board about some of the comments from Jones Day, but not restricted to Jones Day comments, so that we define a way forward. And I think that would be I hope this answer is satisfactory to you.
Okay, thank you.
I haven't had time to read the chat. I don't know if there are any additional comments. I note Holly's comment that the lawyers will have a short 4-page memo that will circulate after the call. And then there will be more detailed comments later in the week. And I see Holly want to add a few words. And then we'll move to the next agenda item. Holly?
Yes, good morning, all. Can you hear me?
Yes, Holly, please.
Hi. I just wanted to clarify, you've asked for a very short memo, and in keeping with that, we've really focused only on the sole member issues and the IRP issues. We felt that those were the most important, and by Friday, of course, we will provide our on the full chart, but given that the board is meeting today, we thought it was important to get this in front of you. As soon as we get off the call, I will be this morning in another hour, I'll be hitting the send button so that you will have it. I do suggest that you may want to make sure that the board has it today as well and maybe even consider posting it, but I leave that to you once you've had a chance to see it.
Thank you, Holly. Okay. I think with that we can move to the next agenda item, which is very appropriately the preparation of the board discussion taking place, must be tomorrow for most of us, at least for some of us. And before that, I would like to just confirm to Bruce Tonkin in the chat that a clarification of the status of the Who is the AOC who is review change proposals that were announced by Steve Crocker would be very welcome very soon on this list, so that we everyone has a view, can form a view and an opinion on the proposed changes before the end of the public comment period. So I would suggest we add this as an action item for Bruce, as board liaison, to ensure everyone has a shared view on this. And with that, I will turn to Thomas for the next agenda item. Thomas?
Thanks very much, Mathieu. And we're now going to discuss how to prepare for the next meeting with the board. And basically, we should all remember that the meeting on the 2nd of September, 22 UTC, is the second of a series of meetings that is planned with the board. So after the initial administrative call that the co-chair has had with the board caucus last week, we agreed that we would have three calls, the first of which took place yesterday at 22 UTC, which was the board briefing. And this meeting was attended by many of you. And the idea of that meeting was that the board gets first-hand information from our group on our report. So we had the co-chairs and the rapporteurs explaining what we did, pretty much in line with what we did during the webinars. We also had our legal advisors present, and they chimed in on a few occasions to offer advice. And this was basically to ensure that the board had a good understanding of what we were doing. Because if you're looking at the Jones Day memo, it says certain things, and obviously the Jones Day memo is not addressed to us, but at the board. But there are things in it such as that we're changing the culture of consensus-based the decision-making and stuff like that, and we want to have an opportunity to ensure that the spirit of the proposal is appropriately conveyed. And, you know, certainly there might be issues with understanding the report, but if you combine that with the legal memo from Jones Day, certainly I think it's a good idea, and I hope you will join me in saying so, that the board gets first-handed information from the pen holders of this report. So obviously this call went very nicely. We didn't expect any major concerns to be raised there. That was not the plan. The board has said they want to primarily listen during that call, and they're continuing their analysis of our report, and we can expect them to raise concerns on the 2nd of September at 10 p.m. UTC. But I think what's important to mention in preparation for this meeting is that when we did the presentation and when we went through the various areas of our report, we checked with the board whether there are concerns or whether there are questions. And it turned out that, you know, there didn't seem to be any questions with respect to mission commitments and core values. There didn't seem to be any with the four building blocks. There didn't seem to be any with the idea of fundamental bylaws. But what turned out is that there were a lot of questions with respect to the IRP in particular and the single membership model. So I think we should all be prepared to have a discussion, especially on those areas. And we've also asked the board to provide us with at least bullet points or some indication of what their questions or concerns might be so that we can prepare for the meeting with the board. But I think that, you know, while during the call yesterday, the board was listening, during the next call, it will be our task to listen to what the board has to say. And just to add to what's been said by others in response to the Jones Day memo, let's not focus on that paper too much. We're going to do our homework and ensure that we rectify points in the report that, in our understanding, are misrepresentations of our work. Let's speak to the areas where Jones Day sees issues with destabilization of the organization. But when it comes to more or less matters of taste, which model you like better or which route you prefer to take, I think it's not our call to chime in on that. What we presented is a community process. It was an iterative process. It was a compromise that we came up with. And I think that the board, or we should not advise how the board will position itself towards our recommendations, but we should listen to their concerns. And do remember that after the first report, the board had raised concerns with derivative lawsuits and with statutory claims, and we responded to those unintended consequences. And I think we would be best advised to take the same approach and let's not be distracted by this paper only. So I think in terms of preparation, all we can do at the moment is wait for the board's feedback. We will have both sides' lawyers on the call. We will have the board. We've invited NTIA to the call, as well as our group. So I think we're best placed to have a discussion that brings everyone up to the best possible information level on these, on the various items. But nonetheless, I'd like to hear from this group whether there are any issues or areas that you would like to raise proactively. So let me pause for a moment, and while you're considering which points you might introduce here, although we don't have to introduce any, let me just add that there might be one point coming up which has been alluded to in the previous feedback from the board, and that is that there are gaps or perceived gaps in our report because we haven't spelled out all the niceties of the processes. And I think Tijani also spoke to this during last week's call when he said, well, when it comes to voting, who's going to accept those votes? Who's taking care of the procedural aspects and all that? Also, on the IRP, we haven't spelled out glorious detail. We never planned to do that by this time because, as you remember, the Workstream 1 definition says that accountability enhancements need to be in place or committed to. So we've been working on the basic pillars of the accountability enhancements with the intention to flesh out detail, but to have the commitment first, which we think would suffice. But it turns out that the board perceives those areas as gaps in our proposal. And, this might be, or this will surely be a point that the board will bring up, and I think it's for us to consider how we best go about with this. So if there are gaps that could actually turn out to be or to pose a risk to the success of our proposal, then I think at least we would need to discuss with the board, let's say, whether the old or the new IRP rules should apply in this interim phase before we have actually fully fleshed out the paperwork for the IRP. So that's just an example to illustrate what another board concern, in addition to the other main areas that will surely come up, might be. Alan, you've raised your hand. Fire away.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, the same subject I raised when I last raised my hand. I'm somewhat worried that because of the way the mission commitments and core values were presented in the draft report, your comment that they have had no complaints on this may be because they're not aware of it. We made substantial changes overall from the current bylaws and substantial ones from the previous version, but they're not easy to track. Becky did create a very useful document. I haven't seen that posted anywhere, and I don't think it's been distributed to anyone other than this group. My question is, has the board received that, and are they really aware of all the changes that we're making? Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Let me turn to staff to double-check whether it has been distributed. I think at least we have authorized its publication, so please do double-check, and in case it hasn't yet been published, please do so at your earliest convenience. Unless there are more points to add, I think that's it for the preparations with the board. I hope that many of you will come and join the discussion so that you get full insight into the board's thinking, because I think that's certainly something that we need to take into consideration as important input from the community. And with that, I'd like to hand it back over to, I guess, Leon. Let me check my notes, but I think it's Leon taking care of the next part.
It is me, exactly. Thank you, Thomas. So you might remember that in our previous call, that was call number 50, we briefly discussed the separation cross-community working group.
that the CWG stewardship recommended. And there was a discussion on whether we should go on clarifying that the SCWG for naming the separation cross-community working group in some way would be set up per the current procedures, let's say, for example, through the chartering organizations, or the other option we had was to elaborate a specific process in our final recommendations. We began this discussion. There are some thoughts and some people that believe that we should not undertake any further work about this issue. And there are also those who believe that the CCWG should put suggestions in for the CWG stewardship to consider in our final proposal. So at this point, I would like to just make a very brief recap. We sent to you an email explaining how this issue raised. The CWG stewardship report states that if the IANA function review determines that a separation process is necessary, it would recommend the creation of a separation cross-community working group. And this recommendation would need to be approved by a supermajority of each of GNSO and CCNSO councils. And this would be, of course, determined according to their normal procedures for determining supermajority. And this community mechanism could include ICANN membership, if ICANN were to become a membership organization, of course. And at some point it states that the CCWG would be the one highlighting how this working group would actually form and how it would work. So I guess this is where the confusion arises from. And while the ICG draft report also specifies that the empowerment of the special IFR to determine that a separation process is necessary, and if so, to recommend that a separation cross-community working group be established to review the identified issues and make recommendations. This is only the ICG's assessment, and it was not discussed with the CWG. So what we are up to here is to actually take a step forward and decide whether we want to go with our first option, which would be to clarify that this cross-community working group would only be formed by our current procedures, or if we wish to actually elaborate a specific process to build it into our final proposal. So I see Greg Shatton's hand is up, and I would give the floor to Greg at this point.
Thanks. Greg Shatton, for the record, also a member of the CWG. I believe that this entire conversation is based on a misreading, I guess by the ICG, of the CWG's report. There's really no there's nothing really here for the CCWG to do other than to form a community mechanism. There's really no there was no indication by the CWG, at least, that it needed any CCWG input on the working group that would be formed. So, you know, this is all based on basically a misunderstanding of what was written. So I think we're kind of compounding the going off track if we start, you know, trying to write anything about the working group itself, because there's really no dependency, if you will, in the CWG's report for any CCWG input. Not saying that if there's something wrong, or if we see something that's actually missing, and that we want to give the CWG either feedback or the like, that we need to do anything in that regard. I think if we do anything, it would be to ensure that the community mechanism is an appropriate final step, or not final step, but appropriate late step in the separation pathway, since that's what's proposed. So I think, to the extent that there's any dependency here, it's really just to deal with the community mechanism reference, which was made or written back at a time when it was unclear exactly what the community mechanism would be. That's now a lot clearer, but unfortunately the CWG report and thus the ICG report don't refer to it exactly as succinctly and specifically as we now do in the CCWG, but that's strictly a matter of timing. So I think just to sum up, the only thing we need to do is to test or think about whether this community mechanism that we've created in any way fails to meet or is needs to be changed or implemented in any particular fashion in order to satisfy its role in the separation process. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Greg. I see Steve Del Bianco is next. So, Steve.
Thanks, Leon. It's Steve Del Bianco with the Business Constituency. To the extent that we suggest that the community mechanism would play any role in the separation working group, you need to be aware of a glaring hole in that theory, in that process. And it is this. One of the three IANA functions is the IETF and the protocols, and the IETF isn't part of the community mechanism. So that if separation included the separation of the protocols functions of IANA, it's clear that it would need to be a traditional, regular cross-community working group so that IETF would be part of it, as opposed to the community mechanism somehow substituting for the cross-community working group, because it isn't, in fact, fully inclusive like a regular cross-community group would be. The same might also be said for the numbers community. I realize that ASO will be very likely be a voting member of the community mechanism, and I hope that that's going to hold up. But if there are other elements of the numbering community as well, we need to understand that a cross-community working group is far better than just the community mechanism. Now, Jordan wrote here that the separation working group has nothing to do with numbers or protocols. But, Jordan, hang on a minute. Separation is only with regard to names? That isn't at all clear from the way things are written. Separation, at least the way the BC was interpreting it, is the separation could include one, two, or even all three of the IANA functions. If that's not the case, please set us straight. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve. Next on the queue, I have Martin.
Thanks very much. It's Martin Boyle here. Firstly, to address Steve's point, this is a specific reference to the CWG's report, and that very clearly indicates that the proposal is for the naming community and only for the naming community. That would not preclude numbers and protocol parameters communities acceding to the same process, but there is no obligation on them to do so, and it's not specifically expected that they would. Second point I'd like to make, though, is that the bit that is cited from the ICG draft report is, in essence, a summary and quick assessment of the output from the CWG report. It is not, I believe, intended to replace the CWG report, but to try and identify whether there were any specific implications for the overall picture for making sure that we ended up with a complete proposal. And in my mind, what is said here is quite simple, that the CWG has a process with its special IFR, and that could lead to a separation cross-community working group. I think the only thing that we would see as being necessary in that would be that there would need to be the possibility of creating the separation cross-community working group. And certainly from where I'm sitting at the moment, that would seem to be quite possible in the same way as it was also possible for the CWG stewardship and the CCWG accountability to be created. So I don't actually think that there is anything in this particular statement that would cause an issue of concern, other than perhaps to consider whether there is enough currently within the ICANN framework that would allow the creation of the separation cross-community working group if that should be required. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Martin. So what I'm hearing, overall is that this is not a CCWG issue, and while I really appreciate the views and the points that some members that are both CCWG and CWG participants have brought us, and I will of course go now to Greg and Alan, my take is that since this is not an issue for the CCWG to look into, I would be, after we finish listening to Greg and Alan, I would be definitely calling for any objections on just having this issue closed, since this is not something that we should be looking into. But I'll go to Greg. Greg?
Hi, Greg Shatton. Just to briefly clarify in response to one thing that Steve Del Bianco said, the community mechanism does not participate in any way in the SCWG, the Separation Cross-Community Working Group. It's an approval step after the SCWG recommends a separation. So that's just to clarify that one thing. And also, as I've clarified and others have clarified in the chat, the SCWG is only a separation mechanism for the NAMES community. It does not have any, you know, relevance or effect on separation for the numbers and protocol parameters communities separations, which are separately governed. So I think we've probably said enough. I certainly have. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Greg. Next on the queue, I have Alan Greenberg. Alan?
Thank you very much. Just very briefly, in response to Steve's original comment, this is something the ALAC is very concerned about, that the process that was used by the ICG, and reasonably used, resulted in three completely separate proposals. Should there ever be separation contemplated by any of the three groups, and it clearly can be contemplated by the numbers and parameters protocol groups completely separately from ICANN, that we're strongly recommending there better be conversation and discussion. We're not in a position to mandate it because the reports are completely independent, but we could have chaos or close to it if there isn't close work. No way we can mandate it right now, but it's certainly something that has to be considered. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan. So at this point, I would call for any objections on having this issue closed, for not being a CCWG issue, but rather a CWG-ICG issue. Are there any objections to have this issue closed?
Okay, so having no objections, this issue is now closed, and I will turn back to my co-chair, Mathieu, for the next agenda item. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Leon. And we are back very much into CCWG matters. The next agenda item is an initial discussion on the work plan between the close of the public comment number 2 and the finalization of our report. And as a reminder, our public comment closes on September the 12th, and we are due to provide final report, if we are able to, for consideration in Dublin, which means we have until October the 9th, if I'm not mistaken, to provide this report. That is 27 days, including weekends, for a turnaround. So that's extremely tense. And I think it's worth mentioning that staff is getting organized to provide a populated public comment tool aggregating all comments in the relevant sections of the report by September 15th, so that's a very short turnaround. But still, we have very little time for actually two things to deliver. Item deliverable number 1 is an analysis of the comments. Where do we have consensus? Where do we have to adjust? And deliverable number 2 is obviously the final report, incorporating any changes or amendments or additional elements we would deem appropriate, so that the ASO, the chartering organization, can endorse the outcome in Dublin. And we need, in this timeline, to set time aside for the lawyers' reviews, obviously ensure we assess consensus appropriately, and if there are any minority views, set up the right process for that, as well as ensure we keep the communications materials in sync. That's quite a challenging task ahead of us for these 27 days. So the question we'd like to raise during this call are about whether the group has any suggestions or things that options that would be considered before we try and assemble a work plan, a detailed work plan. Some of the questions include how we would, whether we would consider a face-to-face meeting in Los Angeles. We were invited by the ICANN board to proposed to host a face-to-face in Los Angeles on September 23rd and 24th. We'll certainly come back to this. Other potential questions are whether we should organize intense call periods like we've done in the past, maybe double the number of CCWG calls per week for a certain amount of time, have more work party calls planned, and or other ways to get all of this done in an expedited but efficient and inclusive manner. And before we come back as co-chairs with the help of staff and leaders to this group with a detailed plan, we'd like to hear from the group about potential ideas, but also constraints that we would have to take on board for that. And of course, we do not yet know exactly the amount of work that will have to be done on the final report itself. But I think it's safe to assume that there will be requests. We already have requests for more clarity on some aspects. We'll have the initial feedback from Jones Day in our various constituencies. I think it's fair to assume that any time we can dedicate to this can be usefully put to work, but obviously we'll be bound by our own capacities. So that's the kind of discussion we'd like to have here as a preliminary discussion before we come back with a more detailed plan. In the chat, okay, I note Caboose's point about not having CCWG in parallel with ICG. So avoiding conflicts with ICG will be a target. I'm not sure we can maintain this because our schedules are totally parallel. And so when does the ICG hold a face-to-face meeting? Probably staff can find that out. And while we are investigating, I see Jordan's hand is up. Jordan.
Thanks, Matthew. Can you hear me?
I can, certainly.
Okay, thanks. What I meant by my comment about the depending on the work that needs to be done isn't so much about the public comment. So I think that if there's a serious push against the model again, that would indicate the need for some further rethinking. It was more about whether what we expect to do is to refine the text that we've got into like a third version of the proposal, or whether a more comprehensive rewrite to get clearer, shorter, easier to read, and so on, is what's envisaged for the final proposal. So until we've made some decisions about what we want the final proposal to look like, I certainly wouldn't be able to plan in my head the work that would lead up to that. So if we were to say that the final proposal is just going to be a third draft of this document with a similar structure, with clarity, with adjustments to the decisions in it as needed, with some more explanation, that's one thing. I've heard other people saying that we need a much shorter and more readable proposal document that doesn't much look like these draft proposals. So maybe it's something for the co-chairs and rapporteurs to come back to the next call with a proposal on, but I think the sooner we get clarity about that, the sooner we'll have clarity about the amount of work we need to do and to then set that up.
Thank you, Jordan. I think it's an important point for us to take on board. Regarding the face-to-face proposal in Los Angeles, it is apparently not overlapping with ICG, but I'd like to hear any comments from group members on the opportunity for this. Obviously, this is pretty much at the beginning of the, in the middle of the 27-day period. So it's probably at a point where we would be finalizing an analysis of the comments. I think it has the benefit of probably expediting some of this work. But also, wherever we hold a face-to-face, it's always a loss of at least 2 days of travel on average. And obviously, we haven't checked availability with the group to make sure whether we could maintain the inclusiveness of the work. But since this proposal has been voiced and officially by the board, I welcome any feedback. I see Becky's Becky's concern about it, but others would be welcome. Tijani?
Thank you.
Very strong background noise. And now we can't hear you.
You hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, thank you. So, Mathieu, I would like to say that any kind of interaction with the board is really useful. And I know that perhaps we will lose some days on travel, but it might be not in Los Angeles, it might be not in this way, I don't know these dates, but as much as we can, we have to have interaction with the board. It is a way to avoid any misunderstanding, as we felt it last week. And I think that we have to make an effort to make it happen, any kind of interaction with the board, especially if they ask for it. It is something very good, because we will be more on the same page, on the same level of understanding, and we will avoid a lot of complications afterward. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. I hear your support for the board interaction taking place during around that period of time. Next is Sebastian.
Thank you, Mathieu. Sebastian Bachar speaking. Yeah, I would like to support Tijani, but I want to be more precise. I think the offer by the board need to be taken by our working group. It's very important. They suggest a face-to-face meeting. We need to answer yes to this proposal now. When and where it must be organized could need to be a more open question, I guess, at the date. I guess I read that Bruce says that the proposed date are one proposal, but it could be another date. I think also, if we have this opportunity to have this face-to-face meeting, we need to take some time to have our working group face-to-face also to discuss output of the common period and the next phase, what we want to produce and where we are on the text to be produced. It's very important. And if I may suggest something, is that if it's around Los Angeles and around the board, it could be the date that it suggests, that it could be a date where they met and they can change their date of board meeting, or it could be after the board meeting, after the board meeting in September. And maybe we can see how much people are available and willing to do this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Sebastian. Seeing some comments in the chat as well. Some in favor of face-to-face with flexibility on dates, and others more concerned. I think one way to check whether this would be feasible would be to probably check availability. As well as around these dates. So what we'll do in terms of our action items is we're going to debrief between co-chairs and then come back to you with some form of polling to check whether this proposal gets traction for a certain date or potentially with some constraints about locations, if necessary. But I think that's the last question to raise. And with that, we'll now move to the next agenda item, which is for Thomas. Thomas?
Thanks very much, Matt. Basically, the next two agenda items can be read more or less together. We called them documentation of work and political communication, and that basically seamlessly links to the points that I made earlier. We got feedback not only from NTIA, but also from board members and from other members of the community so far that our proposal is not adequately transparent or easy to read so that everybody gets things that immediately. You know, certainly we've done, in my view, an excellent job in using Explain, having the visualizations, the main ideas of our proposal, but I guess what the report basically does is describe the differences between the second and the first report, but I think we need to make sure that we have a standalone version of the report or some similar document that explains the proposal as it is now compared to the original status quo, you know, how it works. We've received requests to provide some real-life examples or theoretical examples how the different accountability mechanisms are interlinked. You know, if a board takes a decision, if the community vetoes, what happens then? What happens, for example, if GAC advice or an IRP also comes into the play so that people can understand better how the new model would work in practice? So I do remember that James, for example, James Gannon, has raised a request to come up with some visualizations for those scenarios. So I guess that's one area that we try or that we need to think about ways to make our set of recommendations easier to understand, that we can populate it easier with the outside world. This also goes back to numerous requests we got during the first public comment period, that we need to have things easily explained. We are, let's say, halfway through with the explain visualizations and with a, I think, very punchy management summary. But I think we need to further work on explaining our proposals. So that's one area. And then we need to do a better job in spelling out the genesis of and the rationale of our proposal. So why are we doing what at this point in time, and why did we prefer this option over other options that we have discussed? So these are two areas of work, and we would like to get your feedback in terms of how you would like to go about with this. The third area and the documentation piece is what I alluded to earlier, and that is to discuss the yet another transition, the transitional phase between the status quo and the implementation of our recommendations. So what happens to some aggrieved party between the board adopting the new bylaws and our new IRP rules and other procedural documents being finalized, you know, because that won't happen overnight. So I think we need to think about making proposals to the board or discuss with the board, because I think this is an operational issue, be clear about what happens in this transitional phase. So that's the third area. And the fourth area is the political communication. And I'm picking my words very carefully here, because certainly it's not our job to please the political sector. We are not making our recommendations to please a certain audience. We should be focusing on coming up with recommendations that are best suitable for improving ICANN's accountability and meeting the requirements to get the transition done. At the same time, we in the leadership team think that we need to be professional about how we communicate and populate our recommendations in the political world. Senators might not want to read hundreds of pages of documents, and we must ensure that our high-quality outcomes are understood and that do not become victims of misunderstandings or potentially wrong, if not bad, communication to the political world. And then in order to get prepared for that, we have continued a dialogue that we reported about with Tarek Kamil, who, as you know, is the advisor to Fadi Shahadi, who is a former minister from Egypt, who is a wealth of expertise when it comes to the political dimension of works. So this is to let you know that we keep engaging with him, and he thinks that he will think about how to best go about with this. We will continue to share updates with the group, but should you have any feedback for us at this stage, how we best operationalize these four areas, please let us know. So maybe we take the points one after the other. You know, I had suggested we come up with a document describing our works. Then we need to have either another document or another section in such document fulfilling the documentation job that NTIA has asked for, by explaining why we're doing things and the genesis of our recommendations. The third area would be certain scenarios, and the fourth area would be political communication. Tijan.
Thank you, Thomas. Tijan is speaking. As for documentation, I don't think it must be in a separate document. I think that each section, each recommendation has to be well explained, and we have to give the rationales why we did that, and et cetera, et cetera, everything that the NTIA asked for. So if you put it in a separate document, it will be difficult to read the document and then go to the rationale in another document. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Tijani. And actually, when summarizing the four areas, I misspoke. One of the areas speaking to the transition phase between today and when our recommendations become fully implemented. Eva is asking what the accountability concern is. And I think the answer is that we want to make sure that we do appropriate communications and outreach. So we are doing community webinars in a slightly different fashion than we would a board briefing or a briefing to the political sector. So there seems to be some support, but also some questions around these exercises, so there doesn't seem to be more feedback in terms of operationalizing these four areas, which is why I suggest that we take this offline. Now I will write up small briefing documents to better explain why we're suggesting to work on these areas, and we would then get back to this whole group. And I take note of Becky's suggestion that gets traction in the chat to have a webinar focusing exclusively on NTIA requirements. You know, so I think, it, you know, in essence, the idea is just to ensure that our proposal doesn't lose strength because we fail to speak the language, so to speak, of the target groups that we're trying to address. So with that, I think we can end this part of the discussion. I think Mathieu is next.
I will defer to Leon.
Thank you very much,
Mathieu. No problem. Thank you very much, Thomas. Thank you very much, Mathieu. And our next agenda item is the bylaws amendment discussion. As you may be aware,
the lawyers have are in the process of beginning drafting the amendments to the bylaws. So at some point we will have a set of proposed amendments to the bylaws that will be put to consideration for the CCWG, and we should definitely discuss whether we are in agreement or listen to the different to the input by the lawyers, so we know how they reached to any conclusions or any suggestions that they are doing with regards to amending the bylaws. We circulated some months ago, I remember, a process in which we would be having both Icahn Legal and our external counsel sitting together to work on drafting these bylaws. And as I said, this process is about to begin shortly. And the reason for having both teams work together is because we have to take a holistic approach to the bylaws when proposing amendments. And, of course, both Icahn Legal and, in this case, Tidley have the overall view on the different amendments that the CWG has proposed and the CCWG would be proposing. So this way, we would be waiting for this first step to end. And by this, I mean to have a first draft document by both the lawyers and Icahn Legal. And then we could take, of course, a deeper look into this work and discuss it within the CCWG. So this would be an overall approach of how we would be dealing with the proposed text for bylaws amendments. And I would like to see if there are any objections to the proposed method of working with these amendments. Okay, so I don't see any objections to this approach. So we would be, of course, waiting for this first draft document by our counsel and in coordination with Icahn Legal. And after that, we would be reviewing that document. So I see Becky is a little bit confused, and I see already two hands up, James and Holly. So I will go to James. James, please.
I'll actually allow Holly to go first, and then you can come back to me if that's okay.
Okay, James. So Holly.
Hi, I just wanted to say that, you know, we're still a little bit confused about when the process starts, what the time frame is, and what the roles are. But hopefully we will connect with Icahn Legal and Jones Day and whoever is participating in the drafting process sometime this week. We were trying to set up a call and haven't yet heard when that's going to happen. But if there's anything that provides more clarity on when you all expect a draft of bylaws, for example, I'm not clear if that's something that you expect as much as can be done pre-Dublin or whether it makes sense to wait given that we don't have a fully agreed proposal.
Thank you very much, Holly. I think we have discussed in coordination with the CWG chairs that this would be a process in which there would be bylaw drafting at two levels, those that are ready to begin drafting and those that would need to signal a deferred beginning from drafting by waiting for final signals on the different proposals. So I think we have Samantha Eisner in the call, and it would be great to listen from Sam whether they have figured out when this process would be able to begin. I think the sooner the better, of course, but I would hopefully rely that Sam could expand this for us. So I'm sorry I don't have a clear answer for you, Holly, at this point, but we will surely be looking into it with staff and with ICANN Legal. And I'll go back to James now. James?
So I let Holly go first because actually some of my questions were very much along the same lines. So I think we need to get a bit more clarity on what this process is and how it's going to work, because we've discussed it at a very high level once or twice, and, you know, I think there was a broad, rough agreement that, yes, we were going to go ahead and it was going to be a cooperative process between our independent counsel and ICANN Legal, and now things that Jones Day are coming into it as well. But I think we need, in the interest of transparency, and, you know, this isn't very important, we're moving into what could be considered our first kind of implementation step here when we start drafting the actual bylaws, that we need to be very clear on what the process is going to be, who is going to be doing what roles, and even Holly alluded to that may not be still clear at this point, and how transparent that process will also be at an internal level. Now, I think most of us will accept that we may not like it, but it's going to be a cooperative process between the legal teams. But how are we going to address that from a transparency point of view as well with regards to that work? Are we going to allow the CWG to observe the process? Are we going to rely purely on feedback, you know, on a regular basis? Or what way will that process work as well? I think there's a lot of clarity still needed around what this is a very important process, and I think it's something that we need to be very clear on how we're going to approach it, which I don't believe we have the necessary detail that we need.
Thank you very much, James. I would now turn to Matthew, which actually designed the process for the bio drafting, which was sent to the larger group, and maybe he could go into the details of how this process would actually go down. So, Matthew?
Thank you, Leon. And actually, I will abstain from going too deep into the details, but just recap a couple of points. We have agreed that we would experiment this process with the AOC review incorporation into the bylaws. The benefit of experimenting is that we will obviously learn from doing about what's effective or not effective. And we wrote to John Jeffries a couple of weeks ago, and to kickstart this process, Sam Eisner on the chat said that we would see more clearly a time frame to start this work by the end of the week. It's somehow a bit unfortunate that we haven't actually used this extra time to get this information, but I think we are where we are. And now I would suggest that an action item is tasked for Sam as the staff liaison to come back with a clearer deadline for this work to start, and I'm totally happy to resend on the list the current process, and if anyone has any additional details they would like to discuss, that could be something that takes place on the list without taking too much of our call time. Thank you, Leon.
Thank you very much, Matthew. And I see Holly's hand is still up, and
I skipped her because I thought it was an old hand, but I don't know if that's an old hand or a new hand fully.
It's an old hand, and you'd think by now I would have learned the system. My apologies.
No problem. Thank you very much. Okay, so I think that Matthew has made a great recap. Let's remember that this process will turn to us at some point. I mean, we understand that everyone wants to be involved in this, but I think that's not the most practical way to go on it. And we will have the opportunity to have a look at whatever draft the lawyers come up to, and of course have it approved or comment on it, so we can have our saying on this very important process to the working group. So I would now go to the next agenda item, which is any other business. And at this point, I would like to call for any other business. Does anyone have any other business to talk about in this call? Okay, so hearing no one raising any other business at this point, I think we can end this call. It's been a very fruitful discussion. We will continue to work on the different issues that we have open. We have some action items that have been stated in the notes, and we very look forward to our next call. And we would like to remind you to join the calls that we will be holding with the board this week. It will be very useful for all of you that can join to actually join us and listen to the conversation that we will be holding with the board. So I'd like to end this call and just double check with my coaches if you have anything to add, Matthew or Thomas.
No, thank you, Leon.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone, and talk to you soon. This call is now adjourned.
Thanks, everyone.